See the reaction we had from the from that L swap thing?
It was a lot of reaction.
I've never seen so much hate in one place.
I know. It was
there's like 800,000 views of hate.
I know, and there has to be multiple comments that just keep pouring in and different threads and whatever chains of comments.
What I can't figure out, and I'm going to go on the record, and I'm going to say this. I don't like when somebody watches a 20-second clip or 30-second clip of something.
Yeah.
Out of something that was an over an hour.
Right.
And then this is like the people that read these highlights that are fake on
like headline news.
Oh yeah, on Facebook. And then they're like, oh, and they make this whole opinion about what their political beliefs are based off of one little topic. Yeah. Look, here's the point. The point is that the L swap was not designed for people to make power. That was never the intention.
Yeah.
Right? The entire point of the L swap is merely just to offer the people that are in regulated states, and there are becoming more of them. I know we got California, there's New York, and there can be a tie that obviously anybody's going to politically point to. But what I'm saying is, in these states, we have a complication for automotive enthusiasts. And that means that a lot of these people that are in these states, and these states have extremely high volumes of enthusiasts, and Hondata was merely giving another inexpensive way forward to be able to power some of these vehicles with a plug-and-play solution that was CARB approved.
Yep.
Right? They had that, you know, bar CARB approval thing.
One other thing that, you know, people actually watch,
not to make power.
I know, if people,
it's not a case series.
If people watch the entire podcast, they would also see that the question actually comes up on outside of the Type R engine of the K20C1.
Yep.
What is the current engine that should be everyone's go-to for power?
Right. And they're talking about the newer Accord engine.
Exactly. That question came up and was answered. I think people were taking the L swap as that answer, which is not.
And what's crazy is, and just to show you, like, we even made it easier right after that clip was put up, we put up another clip which actually said that.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, I don't know. People can interpret, a little Instagram reel however they want. But yeah, there's a lot of interesting comments on there. And I think
I don't want to say amusing, because I don't know if it's amusing, but the part that I think gets me the most is there was nothing in that podcast that had anything like L swap is going to be the new power making swap. It was very not that, right? Doug went on to explain which K-Series engine was better. He went on to explain which of the cars now you'd want to get the engine from. Like, we already went through that. And for a lot of people, they're going to know that. But for some people that don't know that, that's what the podcast was about.
Yep.
And then on the other side, the one thing that I heard over and over again was about the K-Series still made. Yeah, but it's not the one you want to make power on.
Yeah.
It's the K20C2. Like, here's the thing. You don't want that engine either. So it's irrelevant whether the K-Series technically is still around, because one one vehicle has a motor that you don't want to use as well, right? There are a lot of K24s out there.
Yep.
We know that. But there's a lot of K24s out there that arguably aren't the right K24 to make power either.
Absolutely. If people are looking for the K24... A's,
well, the, right,
you know,
that's the one that everybody says K24, they think of the K24A2,
right? And I mean, you know, frankly, the prices on those are pretty expensive.
Yeah, you well, know, I don't think so.
They're not cheap.
I think they're cheap.
Okay.
Well, think about it like this. I was looking even just on some of the online importers, and if you buy it right from them, it looked like almost like, you know, somewhere between $900 and $1,200. For a K24A2 long block.
I think it's subjective then. I mean, when comparing it now to the Doug podcast,
yep.
Like, how much are people going to pay for an L series?
I don't know.
I think it'll be a fraction of that.
I don't know, just because it's a newer engine. I mean, that's the question. But
that was also the point of the whole thing too, is that they're becoming harder to find. They are increasing in value. Whether you think it's cheap or not is subjective. And I think the fact that these engines, you said, they're readily available. Yeah. They're out there. There's thousands of them. That was the whole point of it.
Well, and people said in the comments, oh, they're not in my junkyards, whatever. But they will be because they made so many cars. Oh, right?
they're in everything. That 1.5 is in everything in Honda right now.
I think the other point to kind of touch on this whole thing is that, look, when it comes down to this is a type of swap that if you bought, let's say you bought yourself, I'm trying to think of a good example, but like... let's say you have an EK or something like that. Now, blasphemy for not putting the K24 as the swap into, or a B series, right? Mm-hmm. I get it. As a JDM, as an old head, I feel the same way as these people that were triggered do as well. However, what we're saying is, for the guy that doesn't have a tremendous amount of money, that lives in a state like California, he can get one of these engines, plug and play, put it into the car, get CARB approved, not have to worry about it. And he went from cars had like, what, 88 horsepower engines? I mean, yeah, don't quote me. I don't want to hear in the comments. Oh, it's not. I don't know. That's not the point.
Get a power bump.
And they get a substantial power bump.
Yep.
It's not there for you to throw a ton of boost out. And like, you know, if you're going to be doing that stuff, you should be building the engine.
Yeah, these aren't 9,000 revving, you know, drag cars. It's not what it's supposed to be.
But sometimes there are going to be things in life as car enthusiasts that we need to explore because they offer an additional pathway. Unlike the ability to get a GTR. I'm so upset. I'm so disheartened. I got to tell you, I've just come to the realization, which like has to be that point. Just come to the realization that I probably will never own an R32, 33, or 34 GTR.
I mean, what about an R35 at this rate?
Well, I think I have more chances of that happening.
Yeah. I mean, it really is sad. I mean, I was looking around at just some R32s, and the prices are piggybacking off of the 34s, and it's just so astronomical. Like,
yeah.
Especially, you know, I don't know when you get to the point where you used to say, oh, at one point I could have bought this car for X amount of dollars. And does it ever go back down to that price, or never will ever again?
I don't think it will.
So it's just missed opportunities then, you know?
Yeah. And I think, you know, I mean, look, whether they're going to go up or not, look, we are dealing with the nostalgia era.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If you look at the reason that hot rods and muscle cars were so popular for our parents,
mm-hmm.
it's because those are the cars they grew up with, and they may not have had, or they may have had, the ability or the money to get one of those cars when it was in their prime.
Right.
So that nostalgia factor carries forward with them.
Well, it's not fair to them because they didn't have the money to get it, you know, during their youth or whatever it was. Yep. And then they got older and they could get it. We can't get it during our youth, and we can't get it during our adulthood either.
But this is our adulthood.
Yeah, but we can't get them still.
But the truth is, even speaking to Troy the other day, like mm-hmm. he said, he had a 32.
Yeah.
And he thought he let it go for really good money.
Yeah.
But that really good money isn't even what you could buy a piece of crap 32 now.
I know.
Right? So I just think it's one of those things. I think the disappointing part for me is that I'm irrational enough to want to own a 30-year-old car or 25-year-old car. No, 30-year-old car. That I'll overpay for. I'm not irrational enough to pay the type of money that some of these cars are going for. Because, look, here's the thing. You know, the R33s, GTRs that you're out there now, the ones that are mediocre
mm-hmm.
are in the $60,000 range.
Yeah, I mean, definitely.
The ones that are nice are $80,000 to $100,000, right?
Yeah.
The 34s are on another plane.
I was taking a look at 32s because between the three of them, 33s are my least favorite. I like the 32s and 34s a lot.
I like the 33s.
So, but I was looking, even last year in like summer, mm-hmm. there was 32s that were being sold for $80,000.
Yeah, but those were the prime examples, right? Like, I mean, that's a beautiful car.
I mean,
but so you're seeing these cars and they sold for in the 40s and we were like, oh, wow, that's, you know, whatever. But now I'm going to go on the record and say this. I think right now may be one of the last chances that some people are going to have to find what we're going to look back on and say that was a pretty good deal on an R33 GTR.
Mm-hmm.
I watch some of these online importers, and yes, I know it's very speculative, but what I saw the day that we went, January 1 came out, where the 34s now had some legality to them coming into the country, everybody raised the prices on their 33s that were in stock.
So why do you think that is?
Well, because I think they know that you're going to have a lot of people that are going to want to get a 34. They're going to seek a 34. They're going to be willing to pay some serious bread for a 34.
Yeah.
But they're not going to be able to get a 34 for that money. And then they're going to do a panic buy and they're going to settle for a 33.
That kind of mindset of like, I was so really ready finally to pull the trigger.
I had the money. I was willing to spend it. I'm getting something. You know what? Instead of spending the 125, which is like
next best thing,
I can still get one of these 33s for 88.
It's crazy.
80, 74.
Well, you know, I mean, I don't know. It's so hard because there are so many other cars that you can get in that price range as well. I mean, when do you start considering just going a completely left or something like that?
I think
that,
that's where I've come up to in my own travels, where it's like, I just don't think I'm ever gonna own one, which is depressing for me. But here's the other thing I'll say is that what I can't reason with myself on is the difference between a 34 GTR and a 34 GTT.
Mm-hmm.
So right now, you can find a 34 GTT that I'm sure somebody bought for $20,000, if that, coming into the country, and they're selling them for 50. High 40s to mid 50s, and really nice ones maybe being more than that.
I've seen them for roughly around 50 all the time. And, you know, truthfully, I like the GTTs too. I think they're really cool. But
the GTTs come with an engine that when you build them, still going to give you some good power, no doubt.
Mm-hmm.
They have the ability and the look to be set up to mimic a GTR.
If you lived in an area...
Except for quarters.
Well, actually, you know what? I guess if you had an R34 here as well, it's mm-hmm. not you're driving that thing in the winter. But
You could. I mean, it's all drive.
I know, but I guess, but like, you literally wouldn't, right? Like,
I wouldn't.
Right, I know. So, but like, if you lived in a sunny state, Florida, California, Florida's not a good example. California, would that be more enticing to consider a GTT?
Well, so I think my problem with the GTT is that when you start talking about. When you start talking about spending some serious money on any car
mm-hmm.
that's 25, 30 years old, you are looking at things like parts that are incredibly difficult to come by. You know, I mean, things age.
Yeah.
You could lock a brand new car up in a climate-controlled facility for 30 years, and some things are still going to, like, dry rot, right? Like... So you're talking about, you know, weather stripping. I mean, things that, like, you don't think are a problem until you start driving it and a little bit and it rains and all of a sudden it's like dripping in down on your door cards, right? Mm-hmm. So I just think, like, there has to be this level of you're putting your money in to own one of those cars. And, you know, arguably the GTTs probably were not collector's items for people over there.
No,
you know what I mean?
No.
It's arguable to say that, like, when somebody bought a GTR over there, they may have had intentions that was their weekend car, that was their fun car, they took good care of it, even in second and third ownerships, maybe in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
These cars could have been, you know, there was a huge cult following as a great car.
Yep.
Same way as the R35 is here.
Yep.
So I think that it's logical to think that these cars could have been preserved, protected, or really maintained in a way that at least you're getting the nicest of the bunch.
Yep.
Right? But, you know, GTTs may not all be that way. And I think the other thing about the GTT stuff is that now you're talking about, do I spend $50,000 right now? And mm-hmm. I believe that they're going to go up. I believe GTTs are going to go up. The R34s anyway. Because I think the GTSTs and the R33s have gone up. And I see a lot of them staying for a long time. And I think that that really just goes down to the fact that you got to have a super, super clean one with, you know, some really nice parts to be able to command the top dollar for the 33 GTST. My God, all these numbers. Let me know those letters.
You know, I've always felt like, especially when you want to dish out money like this for cars or whatever, is I always felt like there's some kind of like ego check involved with it. If someone's dropping $50,000 on a car, they don't want a GTST, they want a GTR. But like the truth is, for a GTT, for the 34, is like the GTT is a really good car. I don't know. I mean, like
it is, but like my thing is, I'm sure when they first came out, if you looked at the MSRP to MSRP from an R34 GTR to an R34 GTT in Japan off the lot, I think it probably would have made a lot of sense just to save up and get the GTR.
Mm-hmm.
But now you have to ask yourself, you know, I mean, we're talking about cars that are more than double in price.
Mm-hmm.
So like, you know, can you build a GTT? With exception of some things, like obviously, you know, rear-wheel drive versus all-wheel drive, or, you know, an RB26 versus an RB25, but an RB25 is still a very capable engine. And truth is, you could powertrain, or you could power plant swap these things, even though engines are going for a premium right now, for sure.
Yeah.
So, but there's other little hackarounds.
Well, it depends what your goals are. I mean, you can get substantial power out of the R25, RB25.
Yep. I mean, look, if I ended up getting a GTT, I would probably take my time and get and pull, like, you know, back in the day, what like Injuku Racing was doing, like with, and like Kevin Lawrence did. What they did was they basically sourced an RB30 block from Australia.
Where'd that come out of? RB30?
I
don't know what that came out of.
Yeah, so I don't remember exactly, but there was an RB30. I think it wasn't even a dual overhead cam engine. I think it was a single overhead cam engine. But they used a very similar to like what the Eclipse guys, you know, like what we used to do is, you know, instead of using, we used to source the 2.4 liter out of a Hyundai Sonata. And while those were single overhead cam engines, a lot of times we used to take the bottom ends, right, because they were a 2.4 liter compared to a 2 liter,
right?
And we would put, then you'd be able to mate the heads from the 4G63, like a first gen head on it, so you'd get a 2.4 liter stroker motor. So you'd build the bottom end from the Sonata, take the top end from
the 4G.
Yeah, from the 4G.
Yeah, nice. That's so cool.
So similar to that, like, you know, they'll do like you know, an RB. I think it's they do an RB30 block, and I think they can mount an RB25 or an RB26 head to it. So you end up getting a 3 liter RB, not a 2.6 liter or 2.5 liter. So, I mean, I'd probably do that if I had a GTT, because now I'm not worried about preserving its originalness, mm-hmm. right? Because the odds that I'm going to get like the most perfect GTT and want to keep it perfect GTT-ness is like, you know, the GTR is the one that had the really cool interior and the cool bits, right? So yep. If you're going to get a GTT, keeping it clean and original, it's awesome if you could do that, if you want to do that. But if not, you're probably going to want to, you know, ditch the front seats to get, you know, some GTR seats, or right. You're going to put some aftermarket seats in, and the car's going to take a different direction. So
yeah,
I think the GTTs are still set up to be, are for the people that are looking to have that look for most of their uninformed friends and the people that aren't going to be super GTR conscious, but they want to have that R34 look. But they're willing to, but they're going to be able to accessorize them, enjoy them, drive them. I think they're going to be more driven versus the GTRs.
You know, here's a question I have for you, Scott. Like, me as a car guy, and you know this about me or whatever, like, I'm not really big into luxury cars. I've never been like that. I'm not into supercars or whatever. Right. Because I'm the type of guy that I can only get excited about things that I think I could reasonably own. And like, That's just always been the way I am. If I'm never gonna own a $325,000 car, I don't even look that in that direction.
Okay.
You know, like it's just something whatever. But you as a guy who loves GTRs and whatever, if you actually were able to purchase one of these things for these kind of prices, what would you do for it? What would be your plans for it?
Well, so I think, all right, so here's the thing.
Put in a garage, ever look at it?
I could make moves to afford one of these cars.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't bring myself to make those moves to own this car. The sacrifice to me isn't worth that. Because mm-hmm. I think the novelty of getting this car and spending that kind of money will wear off after X amount of months. And I'm going to love the car still.
Yeah.
I'm going to love the car still. But I'm going to have this feeling of like, man, was it worth that much money? Now, if the value of the cars keep going up, I guess I can justify to myself that, yes, it's worth the money.
Does the price also scare people off from, like, you know?
Well, I don't think it's a scare off thing.
No, it scare people off from using the car to maybe its full potential. Like, you know, how many people bought a 34 V-Spec and they just throw that thing in the collection, don't drive it, and they don't want to touch it because it was $250,000?
I think most of them.
That sucks, right? Like, don't you? I don't know.
I'm in a weird spot. I inadvertently ended up like that with a lot of my cars.
Yeah.
Right? Because it's a time thing for me, right? Like, I don't have the time to take the Z out. I don't have time to do this stuff. So I end up just jumping into my daily every day.
Yeah.
Right? But, you know, I mean, I agree. If I had more time to be able to drive these cars, I think would just be, you know, amazing. But I can see, you know, I don't want to criticize people that end up doing that because I think that there is a level of, like, if it makes them happy, great. I think the people that I'm really more concerned about are the people that do this for an investment sake and rob some of the people
who really
would love to own the car. I would love to own an R32, 33, or 34 GTR. But now with that said, I like 33s and 34s more than I like R32s, and not for their driving, just for what they are.
Yeah, no, me too. Listen, I mean, literally when I first got hired here, I came in with a poster. I said, can I bring in this poster for my house? And it has an R34 on it. Like, you know, I love these cars. Everyone did growing up, whatever. But I'm telling you, I'm just the type of guy that when the prices start going some direction, I'm kind of just like, that's a sailed ship. And I kind of just give up on it.
I think the scariest thing for me is that a lot of these cars I see, like, let's say, all right, let me use an R33 GTR as an example.
Mm-hmm.
I could spend... And this was yesterday, so yesteryear, so I already missed it. But I could bring myself to spend $60,000 on a respectable R33 GTR.
Yeah, absolutely.
Here's my problem.
Oh, well, it's really funny.
Now you can't. Now it's 80.
Well, I was going to say, it's really funny, though, because, like, if you said this a year ago, I'd probably be like, or 2 years ago, I'd be like, that's a lot. Like, that's really a lot.
I did say
today,
that.
I'm like, that's not that bad.
I did say that. But I guess what I'm saying is this, is that I could bring myself to spend that.
Mm-hmm.
The problem I have, and I'm saying this from a reference point for where they were selling for that.
Yeah.
Okay. So, like, let's not talk about today where now they're $85,000 overnight.
I understand.
But the problem that I have is that it requires an enormous amount of coordination and work to be able to verify that the car you're getting isn't a rusted piece of junk. Too many scam artists over in Japan and different, and even maybe some here, brought these cars in and they were rusted examples and they basically bonded and patched and
sprayed it,
just made it look as the best they can to try to make it seem like this was a really nice clean car. And ultimately when you end up getting into it, you're going to find out that you have a piece of junk. So
that's horrifying, right?
Super scary. Ooh. And there's so many documented cases of this happening, right? So I think my biggest fear was, like, if the car was here, I wouldn't have a problem with it. I would go see it. I would find out. I would have, you know, bring it to this shop. Let's inspect it. Let's tear it. Like, let's make sure I'm getting the right thing.
Well,
but what do you do when the car is across the country? What do you do when there's, and the worst part is there's 7,000 people that are all trying to get the car. Now, obviously, most of them won't have the money, but you're now competing with all these people that are going to go this mile that, and you're not going to be able to get the car.
I would think that the importer or whoever's selling the car on U.S. soil you know, you there has to be people who have high levels of, like,
they do, like, top rank
of high levels of integrity,
where like top rank.
Yeah. Like, you would never have to worry about that through them because it would ruin their reputation or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think top rank, but yeah. Here's the thing.
Their prices are really high.
Well, but I think they're really high because they're basically using that clout that they have, that you're not going to get a crap car, basically saying, hey, look, we got this car. We
top rank
we
vouch approved.
For it. Yeah. Right. But with that said, you know, I think that there's other places out there that will offer you give you a good deal and really be stand up people. And I'm not saying that Top Rank's ever not had an issue with somebody, this, that, the other thing. I'm just saying, like, I think the you know, when something like this happens or something gets overlooked, I think that the reputable companies are willing to work with you to make it right, and other ones aren't, right? These cars are, I mean,
Max had he's scrolling through Top Rank on our screen right now, and there was a S15 for 27. That's not bad. Just saying.
I guess.
S15,
27? I like S15s. I have this thing about S15s, though, and I think this is because, like, I was in the right period of time where you could get a really cool S14 mm-hmm. for 10 to 12 grand. Like, I remember my friends owning S14s mm-hmm. here. So, like, if I'm going to spend $30,000 right now, I want an Evo 5.
Yeah.
And I will spend I will spend up to $30,000. But here's the thing.
Now might be the time to do that, Scott. Just
I know,
saying.
But, like, here's the other thing.
You're going to see the same problem with this stuff.
Yes, but here's where I struggle. Right here. Yeah. That is a 4. That you're showing, not a 5, but that's a 5. So now here's the thing. All right, so let's say hypothetically you can get into this car. Let's because I know they're selling it for 37, but let's say hypothetically I can get into this car for 30, 28.
Mm-hmm.
28 is really where I'd like to be. But let's say I can do this. I would be willing to do it. My problem is that the car has to be really nice at that point because it's extremely difficult to get parts for these
I'm
things.
Sure.
Like, you need a windshield. Think about this. You drive the car and get a rock chip, one that will not be able to be fixed. Where do you get a windshield? You call up your local
Safelite.
Oh yeah. you're getting an Evo 5 windshield, no problem.
Yeah, they'll get that for us.
You gotta find all those parts used, and because of the fact that the cars have been in Canada for so long, for us, one of the easiest places to source some of these used parts from used and abused cars that are probably rotted away are from Canada.
Yeah.
And most of them seem to be on the west coast of Canada. We're on the east coast. So yeah. Like, go get a windshield. How much is that gonna cost?
A lot of money. Yeah.
And you don't know if you're going to get one that's any good.
Well, this is the problem with having this expensive hobby. What is cars?
It's not. No. Here's the thing.
You know?
This is the problem with having. This is the problem with trying to justify spending this much money on a car that's this old.
Well, if you keep trying to justify, you never will.
I know. That's what I'm saying. I'm never going to own one.
Oh, man. It's just.
I'm right in the stage now where I've kind of given up all hope that I will get a 32, 33, or 34, and moved into the fact that I'm probably going to look for a 35.
Okay. Well, I mean, that's cool.
Well, but I say that, and it's probably never going to happen.
I think you can find the early models of 2008s, 9s of the GTR 35s.
But you don't want those cars.
But that's, yeah.
I mean, unless you get a trans, like, you look, anytime you're going to buy a, you know, something 15 and under, you got to budget in whatever the car costs. I mean, I was just talking about this with Vinny Tan the other day.
Yeah.
You got to budget the car plus another 12, 13 grand to get a trans done.
Also, it just hit me that the R35 has been out since 2008. Yeah. 2008,
well, I mean, it was out earlier, I think, in Japan.
Yeah. But we're going into 2024 and they still have the R35. It's crazy.
100%.
Isn't that nuts?
You know, relatively.
Very Nissan.
You know? Very Nissan. Well, look, I think that there's a factor of legacy and
where's the R36?
Pedigree. Well, look, that's arguable. I don't want to argue about that.
Like, where is
people,
it?
People I don't... are saying it's coming. People saying it's not coming. I don't know.
The big news is the 24 Nismo. Come on. Right?
Yeah. I mean, for
we're,
right now.
We're overdue. It's like, it's just like how they let the 370Z ride for all eternity.
Yeah, but who's the suckers? We are. We kept buying them.
I guess.
You know what I mean? Like, I mean, let's not play this like they didn't play any bad cards.
They sold that thing in 2020 for, you know, with a 2009 technology inside of it.
Yeah.
Wow.
The problem is that the car that Max is showing is a rendering, and it won't look like that. If it looked like that, why is it that every rendering that's out on the internet
is better than what
actually comes?
Yeah, I don't know.
Like, that car is sick.
Yeah.
Right?
Uh-huh.
But it won't look like that. It won't look like that. So, that car is sick. Anyhow, so with that said, that car looks great. I don't know. I'm super depressed that I don't think I'm ever going to get one of the GTRs that I would love to own.
I mean,
I got to hit some lotto.
I know. The crappy part is that this is happening to all my favorite cars. That's the crappy part about it. Like, I tell this story enough times, whatever, because I really do regret it. And probably in, like, the year of, like, 2015 or something like that, I was debating on taking out a little bit too much debt. Look, that happened to me now. The arm mice fell.
Nice.
But, maybe going into a little bit too much debt to buy an NSX. It was probably, a 2000 or something like that. And it was $27,000 right here in Long Island.
Automatic?
No.
What?
But this is in 2015.
That's cheap.
$27,000. They weren't going for crazy money then.
Oh yeah, they were.
No, it wasn't.
Yeah, they were. Not $27,000 in 2015.
Yeah.
No,
dude, it was $27,000.
Those were still $60,000 cars then.
No, it wasn't.
100%.
I'm telling you. Prior to the new NSX coming out with the hybrid one, with the new one, whatever it is, prior to that, the prices weren't that high.
I think they were, because my friend's father owned an NSX, and he sold that thing for a lot of money, and that was my God, it's got to be almost 20 years ago,
dude. It was 27. That's what I remember, at least. I mean, and I just kicked myself. I'm like, damn, now these cars are minimum 65.
Yeah,
you know,
that's a cool man. Jeez.
Like, I don't know that you can,
and I'll be honest with you, I don't know that you can even find a really good, like, every time I see one that's, like, in the 65, it's automatic.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't even see those. Yeah, look, I mean, look, there's no doubt that the enthusiasts and you know, kind of nostalgia of our age generation has fueled basically this... this thing for 90s Japanese sports cars.
I know, it's crazy. Even stuff like just Evo 8s are going up in price. It's like, what the heck?
Well, yeah, that makes sense. But here's what I will say. I will say that, you know, for there are going to be a fair number of cars, and maybe I'll take some heat for this, but there will be a fair number of these Japanese sports cars, maybe not GTRs is right now, but that will be at top dollar or at very expensive pricing and sit for a long time without selling.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Because the average person has to be an over-the-top hardcore enthusiast to be able to want to spend that kind of money or have money that they just don't care about versus somebody that actually has to borrow the money, because now the cars are inflated to such a point where, you know, you're really going to have to make some serious moves and have some serious collateral to be able to get that kind of money for a car that's that old.
Yeah. And, well, also, there's going to be a level of pickiness, I feel like. If I had the money to buy one of these straight up, like, if I was that, you know, wealthy or whatever it is, like, I know that I'd be saying, I want a 34 V-Spec, Midnight Purple. I'm not taking anything less,
you're
you know?
If you had all the money in the world.
Right. You know, so, like, if you got those in-between level, you know, quality cars... Yeah, they're probably gonna sit, don't you?
I think when the GTR stuff, I think they'll sell.
Okay.
For right now, there's a lot of hype and a lot of push here. Now the question is, you know, when does that run out? I'm so worried that I'm gonna be like 77 years old. Well, first off, I hope I get there, but like I'm gonna be 77 years old, and then now wanting to buy because I find some guy, like, you know, as the other end comes up where people have gone through this stuff. Like I'm watching some of these muscle car and hot rod car values plummet, right? Because they're all dying. Like a lot of these guys are dying off. I hate to say it. It's not funny, but you know what I mean.
No, definitely.
So these cars are becoming available now. There's a resurgence of people that want the cars, but not as much. And now all of a sudden, you're starting to see them come to realistic numbers. And like I'm worried it's gonna be like, I can't believe I got it now. Like, what am I gonna? I can't even bend down to wash it. You know what I mean? Like, but yeah, I'm worried about it. R35, if I find the right deal, I'll probably end up pulling the trigger on one. But it's got to be the right car, and it's got to have the right documentation, and it's got to be in a proximity that I can actually get my hands on the car. Because this whole thing about booking a flight to go out there, the problem is, how many times do you do that and lose the car? I'm too scorned by... Remember, there was a lot of times I made an attempt to get an R33 GTR for around the $40,000 number.
Right.
And I lost three of them after trying for a year and a half. And then I kind of got it depleted with that. Then I was like, oh, I'll get a 32. And then like 32 prices went up. And I was like... You just get to a point where, like, how many times are you going to throw all this stuff at the wall to try to get a car?
Yeah.
Not flying across the country to have some dude go, oh, man, sorry, I just sold it 20 minutes ago. Like, I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
So, that sucks. Anyhow, so what cars are you guys going to steal from us that we're not going to be able to buy? Put it in the comments below. I don't know. I mean, I just wish that there was a better way to have these cars. And I'll tell you the other thing that that doesn't happen as much with the JDM cars, that really happened more with the American muscle and hot rod cars, was you saw companies like Year One come to market with the ability to buy reproduction parts.
Yeah.
Right? Weather seals, trims, badges, quarter panels, fenders, like... They were, and I know that there's going to be some stuff out there, but for the most part, like they had the ability to basically build a whole new car, although it wasn't effective, but from new reproduction parts. And I really, our segment hasn't really gone that way yet. Yeah. So like, I think it'd be a different thing if you said to me like, oh, you can get a beat up 34 and you can restore it, or you can get a 34. Or an Evo, whatever. But yeah, there are windshields available. There are fenders available. There are, so you could.
I mean, that would help us a lot. I mean, because everyone else, what wants? They want stuff straight from Japan, right?
Because for the most part, unless they're buying cool parts, they can only get the stuff wherever it is.
Yeah.
So anyhow, so I'm depressed. That's pretty much it. If you're still hanging around, thank you.
If any of you guys have an R33 for a good price for Scott, let us know.
Yeah, or 34, 35.
Or 32 for me.
Or 32.
Yeah.
If you got, what do you got? What do you got? And don't say good price and then put like 10, six figures on it.
Yeah.
That's not good price. That's not what we're talking about. Good price is not... what you think is fair for the market.
It's family friend price.
Yeah.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, hook us up.
Yeah.
Anyhow, we'll catch you on the next one.